This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Excited about 2022 and what's ahead of us and our chances. We're going to continue with the plan of building for this bright, long future in the American League East. And I think we're right there. I think that it's liftoff for this team.
Oh, we love that cut. That might be, as far as inside access is concerned, that is the baseball version of We Know Pass Rush.
Appreciate it. Nobody appreciates Pass Rush.
Appreciate Pass Rush. Those might be our two favorite cuts. That's Mike Elias a couple years back talking about liftoff. And there was a time where a lot of smart baseball people thought the Orioles were on the verge of something really special, and this rebuild looked like it was over and ready. And now we sit, and we were talking about this yesterday off the air. Over the last 100 games, they're under 500. They are currently 3-4. So where are we now with the Baltimore Orioles?
Well, take the 3-4 and the record out of it. Like, we've had these discussions going on for years now about what should a fair schedule be for the rebuild? What's ahead of schedule? What's behind schedule? When should they turn the corner? When should the way that they amass and collect talent at the major league level start to resemble teams, established teams that have a penchant and history of competing for World Series titles? And a lot of this is debatable and somewhat nebulous, and if you want to factor in regular season wins, you certainly can. But I also think you need to be realistic as the market continues to, as baseball continues to tell you what it values. Now, these guys like to zig when everybody else zag, but as you've got a team like Arizona, who was rebuilding in 2019, just like the Orioles were, and they've got a Corbin Carroll under contract, and they've got a Ketel Marte under contract, and they've got a Brandon Pfaadt under contract, two of those deals just coming this week. And as the Boston Red Sox find a kid in the fourth round who played basically 1 year at Georgia Tech, wasn't a five-star recruit, fourth-round draft pick, he's already not only their starting second baseman, but they've got cost certainty with him for the better part of a decade. As you see the Milwaukee Brewers with Jackson Churio, like before the kid's 19 years old, basically, line him up forever. As you see the team that picked right behind the Orioles and kicked their ass in the playoffs get Bobby Witt secured forever while Adley Rutschman, who knows? You look at Detroit, where they were in 2019, total rebuild, taking Riley Green fifth overall. Compare their roster to the Orioles. Compare the totality of their organization, including high minors where they're loaded, to the Orioles, who are a middling organization right now by anybody who knows what they're talking about in the minor leagues. So it begs a lot of questions for me. You know, like, are they ahead or behind? To me, they are absolutely positively behind where I thought they would be when they start to be a contending team.
It's semantics. But at the point where they won 100 games and then they traded for Corbin Burns in the offseason, at that point, to me, the rebuild was over. But what they've done since that has been a failure. It's like your rebuild's done once you build a team that's a perennial that's supposed to be a perennial contender. And what they have done since that point has built a middling roster. And what they did at the trade deadline last year and what they did this offseason to try to fortify a team that is supposedly past the rebuild has been awful.
They were ahead of schedule in 22.
when no one thought, look, they're going to lose 100 games. They ended up finishing with a winning record.
I said they'd compete for the playoffs.
You brought up Adley Rutschman in May, and it was a fun ride. Then you won over 100 games in 23. But to not have a postseason win yet is an extreme disappointment. And you gave out all of those names in terms of clubs, a similar market size with the Orioles that have given out the extensions. That's what's really concerning. And we talk a lot on this show about maximizing the window. And we have on so many national guys needing to be more aggressive, knowing this window. Guys, I was on Spotrac this morning and looking at payrolls for future years. The Orioles are not only the only team in 2026 to not have a dollar committed to it because Tyler O'Neill, player option, Kittredge, Laureano, Mateo, club options. They don't have a dollar committed to 26. They are the only team in baseball to not have a dollar committed to 2027. I understand the two to tango logic, but it is frustrating when you see so many other teams, similar market size, come to terms with young core players and extend them.
It drove people around here crazy, and rightfully so, because the Angelos regime was a regime of extremes. We're not going to sign any international players. We're not going to spend any money. We're going to have a level of physicals, right, to give somebody an extension. We're going to be so extreme in our physicals that we find ways not to keep people around here who should have been kept around here. Like the lefty reliever, like Nelson
maybe
Cruz.
Maybe Aaron Seeley, who they back when.
Even talking the trade with the Red Sox, the Eduardo trade. The reliever wanted to stay.
Andrew Miller.
Right? We can't give him three or four. Right, we dealt with all those extremes, and we thought we were getting balance here, and we've got extremes. We don't give anybody multi-year deals. We don't have any call certainty in the future. We don't extend anybody. So when I evaluate them as they stand as an organization entering the season, I don't care about the first seven games. They are who I thought they were. This is their realities. They got literally nothing for the major league talent they inherited. That's turned into Dominguez, basically. Mm. All the Mountcastles, the Hayes, the Mullins, the major league talent they inherited, they got nothing for. Their second-tier prospects, not the kids in the top 50, not the kids in the top 100, the Stowers, the Norbies, the Joey Ortiz. As it stands right now, they got nothing for all of them. They got 1 year of Corbin Burns. You know, Hernandez for Cole Irvin, that was garbage. Connor Norby for a guy who can't even pitch a triple A. So you turn your second tier prospects into nothing long term. You've extended no one, and while you've extended no one, the prices continue to soar for everyone because everybody else is doing it. You've created a massive void from double A up on starting pitching in your entire organization. Some of it's injuries, everybody has injuries. But because you don't draft any of those pitchers and because you've traded the ones you do draft, not only do you have no starting pitching at the major league level, you don't have much at triple A, and there's a lot of question marks at double A. They've created a huge chasm, and they've got no pitchers, healthy pitchers right now under contract beyond this year. The farm system, once they stop drafting one every year, what's happened there?
It's not been.
No one will tell you it's even in the top 20. No one who knows what they're talking about will tell you it's even in the top 20. They get married to certain archetypes of pitchers and hitters, and they've had more hits than misses.
You mean like, more misses than hits?
More misses than hits. You had an owner who came in and said, I'm willing to spend money. They tamped it out of him. Instead of embracing it and actually getting some work done, they've got him now talking the same gibberish that they talk. They're stubborn to a core with the extremes that they utilize and how they acquire talent. And tell me one kid, double A or higher, they've been here 6 years, who you would call an international success story besides Sam Bassaio.
That's the one. Yeah. That's where we are.
So I would say if you're cool with all that, then keep telling me how great these guys are. But none of that checks any boxes for me. Oh, yeah. And who's their Christian Campbell? Who's the fourth round pick who they wanted to give a boatload to because he was better than they even thought they were? It might have been Joey Ortiz. You traded him for 1 year of Corbin Burns. You know who it might be? Connor Norby, you gave him away for literally nothing at the deadline on
Trevor
a vanity
Rogers.
Project
they
for a lefty who you then came out and said, well, we knew he sucked anyway.
Yeah, they knew he was damaged goods anyway. He'll be fine.
So that's who's running your organization. Yeah. If you're cool with that, great. I expected more.
Before we get to what's going on the show today, I do have some breaking college basketball news. Jacoby Gillespie has made his decision on where he's playing college basketball next year. It won't be Maryland, and guess what? It won't be Villanova. He's going to Tennessee. So, Maryland fans, I know that the bald rat's not getting Jacoby Gillespie for another year. So, that makes us feel good. We have a huge show coming up today. We'll get our best bets at 3 o'clock with Arrow Epstein and our own Beltway Ben Hall. Is Len joining us? Should I mention, Tim, that Len Elmore, is he? What's,
well, you just did. Yeah,
well, like, man, is he, Len Elmore supposed to join us. He had to move, but I'm just wondering if you heard back with a time.
Yeah, I'm still waiting.
Okay.
So we're hopeful.
We're hopeful to talk to former Terp great Len Elmore. Josh Vernier covers the Royals for The Fan in Kansas City. We'll talk to him at 4:30. And Jay Billis, very outspoken about the way that that the bald rat left here to go to Villanova. We'll talk college basketball, mostly Terps, with him at 5.
Yeah, we will certainly break down Charlie Morton's outing yesterday, look towards this Royals series. Gunner's back. That's good news. Will he bat leadoff? Will he bat behind Sed? We'll let you know that as soon as the lineup comes out. We continue to start inching towards the draft. We'll talk about hearing some buzz about the Ravens and certain quarterbacks. I mean, with all these picks, even day two, would it make sense to grab a quarterback who you think you might be able to have as a great backup short term and flip into something significant long term? It's at least something I think they should consider. Yeah, buzz. We'll keep you up to date on anything going on in the portal there. We'll hear some, I guess it was Big Ten Network that he went
Big
on.
Ten. Yes.
Well, he had some interesting things to say, maybe a little bit more interesting than even the press conference. We'll hear that. And we'll take you right up to BBT.
Coming up next, though, we hit the hot corner.
And Bone's going to a funeral.
Yeah, and Bone.
Oh, I got BBT.
Yeah.
After BBT.
Yes.
Nighttime funeral?
Viewing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Bone has one outfit for viewings, and he's wearing it today. We will hit the hot corner. Our thoughts on Charlie Morton through two starts. Well, we'll give them to you next here on The Fan.
I think that's normal. I think he was better this time out than he was in Toronto. Thought his curveball was better. He had better put away stuff. Stuff was good. Just the middle pitch to Bregman and kind of a backup curveball there to the young kid Campbell. That's an impressive looking player. So it's a good team. This is a good lineup. I mean, they don't even have Devers going. They don't. Duran and Devers are really dangerous at the top. Adding Bregman, that's a huge piece. He hurt us all series. So, it's a tough team to pitch against.
Hider. That's what I said yesterday. He was better yesterday than he was in his first start. Charlie Morton threw two starts. He's 0-2 with a 9.72 ERA and a whip of 1.92. Yesterday's start, 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 walks, 5 earned runs, 10 strikeouts. So Charlie Morton through two starts is?
Bad. He's not giving you length. He's not giving you quality. I mean, he's not here to strike people out. He's not your closer. You don't need him striking out the side once he's given up 5 earned runs in 4 innings. That's great that he finished, the 5th inning with 3 strikeouts. I'd say it'd mean a whole lot more if you weren't walking guys and going into, 6-7 pitch counts with guys at the bottom of the order and walking people and then giving up meatball home runs to the next guy you face. Here's what I know. It's only 2 outings, but the league's batting .500 off his curveball, and they're slugging .818 off.
So he's about to get better. That's not going to last.
Well, I can tell you, I don't think they're going to bat .186 off it and slug .306 off it like last year. And if that's not the case, because that's what he's become. It's his uncle Charlie's better than anybody's in the league. And if you can still throw 95 and sprinkle in a few other things, and the league can't touch your curveball, it's a premium pitch, then you can get by for another year as an innings eater at 41 years old. Now, can you do all those things in the AL East without your curveball, not only not being a premium pitch, but one that people are willing to sit on and wait in 2 strike counts and hammer 450 feet? I'd say that calculus. I don't know how the algorithm work over there in the warehouse, but me and my laptop, I'd say Charlie Morton's in trouble.
It is very concerning, these first 2 starts, and this is coming off a strong spring training for him. But, Jason, I just kind of question, how much confidence does he have in this curveball? We know he didn't in that first start, but you look at his numbers last year. He threw the curveball significantly more than he threw the four-seamer, where this year, I get it, just 2 starts. Yeah. He's thrown the four-seamer more than the curveball.
Before you react, let's hear Charlie Morton from his own mouth. What did he think about this outing compared to his first?
I don't know. I think in Toronto, my four-seamer was playing up, and it was today too. And I think it took me a little while to see that, you know, and to start being more aggressive in zone with the four-seamer. The fourth inning in Toronto, three hits real quick, you know, on bases loaded real quick. So I would say it was, I mean, if I had to, I would say it's pretty similar. It was a pretty similar outing in terms of high pitch count early, you know. But really, like, I didn't feel too threatened by the traffic today. I didn't really feel like my back was against the wall, really. I didn't. Whereas in Toronto, I felt like they were keeping pressure on me.
So he's smart enough to know what he's doing wrong. The question is, can he fix it?
Look, I think they're in trouble because he's telling you he's probably got to lean on his fastball more, and he's not at a stage of his career where the fastball is going to be an out pitch for him very long. Maybe an outing or two, but these guys adjust really quickly, and he's given up 18. He's faced 41 batters. He's given up 18 hard hit balls. That's problematic.
41% of his pitches have been a four seamer this year compared to just 28.6% last year. That's a serious uptick.
They're going to catch on quickly. If the answer is more four seamers and less curveballs, I don't think that math is going to work in his favor. And they're pounding. There's a constant, and he alluded to it there.
Yeah.
They're pounding his, I'm not even going to call it secondary stuff, because for him, the curve and the sinker and the change and the cutter combined should be doing a whole lot more work than the fastball. The totality of that pitch mix has been, for me, it's been troubling. It's early, but it's not early in his career. And you know what? It's not early for your third highest paid. This is how they built their team. Yeah. It's their third highest paid player, and he is unquestionably their number two starter. Wow. This is not how number two starters operate on teams that go anywhere.
So more from Charlie Morton. He gave up two home runs yesterday. Talked about the long ball being an issue.
I think you have to just be honest about what happened. I think I had good stuff. I think I made a lot of really good pitches. I just made a couple really costly mistakes. You know, Breggy ambushed a heater. That was just middle 0-0. And then I got into a deep count with Campbell. What I saw was a flinch on the first breaking ball I threw to him. I saw a flinch on the second breaking ball I threw to him. And on 3-2, you don't necessarily think that hitters are going to, especially in that situation from what I saw, be able to stay on a breaking ball. And it was a decent pitch. I mean, for a 3-2 curveball, it's a decent pitch. But yeah, I mean, you could always second guess it. I can look back and go, man, I mean, if I just got the ball on the ground, maybe sinker or whatever, you know, I can. But I think the way I evaluate that outing is, you know, there was some early inefficiency that ran my pitch count up, and they made me pay for those walks with the long ball, two good swings.
I'll tell you this. After listening to him talk, I hope he pitches better because I like listening to him talk.
He's a great guy. Look, if he was their number five starter, I'd be all for it.
Yeah. It's more about roster construction than him. Isn't that fair?
Oh, yeah.
He's the one established starting pitcher that they brought in from the entirety outside their organization. He's the one major league starter that they brought in knowing that Grayson's been hurt for 3 years, knowing that you got the surgery done on Bradish way later than you showed up, so you compromised his year, knowing that pitchers tend to get hurt, knowing that John Means is leaving. This is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
It's been terrible from the first batter in two straight starts.
Yes.
So it's not about, like, again, Charlie Morton's been a fine major league. I will tell you, when they're over the age of 40 and they lose it, and the thing that they relied on most, the plus pitch, people are waiting on in counts where they know you're going to it, and they're destroying it, and you're 42 years old or halfway to 42. Go ask how, like, go look at Adam Wainwright. There's a lot of guys we can look at. And when it started to go look at Lance Lynn a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When that starts to happen, and it happens this soon, after he looked great in the spring, I'm telling you, they got a starting pitching problem. But I told you that all offseason.
Coming up next, we switch to the Ravens. Purple rain in the forecast. Ravens have 11 draft picks. Should they use one on a quarterback? So maybe a quality backup for Lamar Jackson. We discuss next here on The Fan.
Three, and that's Milrow all the way. Jalen Milrow will walk in. Touchdown, Alabama.
You know, Lamar Jackson is very dominant. It's been evident to how he's played this season. For someone that's inspired us to go to the NFL, just seeing as he takes his game to the next level each and every year, him being the top of the league, him definitely being a top five quarterback in the NFL, that's inspiring for sure. You know, as a young quarterback, that's inspired to go to the NFL. So that definitely puts a smile to my face, and I definitely love watching Lamar. You know, secretly, I'm actually a Raven fan. I grew up a Raven fan, so I pull for the Ravens.
So you heard the Jalen Milrow highlight, and then you heard Jalen Milrow talking about his love for Lamar Jackson. By the way, before we get into this conversation, it is now officially official. Gunnar Henderson activated, Dylan Carlson sent down, so expect Gunnar in the lineup tonight when it comes out in a little bit. But Jalen Milrow, we bring him up because and the Ravens did sign Cooper Rush, but
essentially a one-year, $3 million.
Yeah. Should they draft themselves a quarterback prospect?
Great cut there, Beltway Ben. There are people who think in the league who think it's entirely possible. One could say the Cooper Rush signing is at least an indication that they're looking at the backup quarterback a little differently than they were with, you know, Snoop and Josh Johnson and some of these guys holding it down. People are incredibly impressed with this young man. The Ravens have a personal history of developing quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Alabama connection.
Yes.
And if you have 11 picks and you know they're not all making your team and you have the luxury of, like, they call them lottery tickets, right? I mean, that's what Eric calls them. And you've a chance to turn a lottery pick where, let's face it, they've found there's been plenty of second round duds or third round duds. You have a chance to find somebody who's going to come into your building. He's going to check every character. He's going to check athleticism. He's going to check a lot of things for you. And he's going to make no money the first 4 years. And you're going to have a chance to develop him for several years. And with the quarterback supply and demand issues being what they are in the league, you could have the opportunity to find yourself a great backup for short or long term, or flip him in the future, and you think you're good at this, and you are. And like, I was talking to an agent who doesn't represent him, but represents a lot of quarterbacks in the league and has a quarterback in this draft. And he's like, look, you think about how we've evolved as an industry in terms of analytics, in terms of the study of the quarterback, and not ideal accuracy is anything but a death sentence anymore. And you just saw Josh Allen get another huge deal. Yeah. And we're talking about Lamar getting a huger deal than that.
Huger.
And these kids are so athletic and they are smart. And a lot of them are, they absorb and they're good learners. You can make gains in some of the things that he might not come into the league right away with. And frankly, it's a different scale, I guess, to some degree. But like, Jaden Daniels was a whole hell of a lot better than a lot of people in the league thought. Jaden Daniels would have been the first pick in the draft, and you would have multiple people trying to trade up and get him. Michael Penix, you know what I mean? Bo Nix. Like, we're seeing that the teams that know what they're looking at and know what they're doing, people would say Bo Nix was overdrafted. Who would say that now? You think Sean Payton would give up Bo Nix for anything right now?
Sean Payton identified him and drafted him.
So even if somebody would say, well, that second round is a luxury for the Ravens to do something, well, if you know what you're doing and you turn him into a real NFL quarterback, you're gonna benefit exponentially while you have him and for whatever you turn him into.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that logic, and we've talked a lot about backup quarterback over the years, and they addressed it with Cooper Rush, but even they got Cooper Rush at their price.
Yes.
The $3 million before the incentives per year, that was their price. What's interesting is you go back from 2008 to now, they've had the two franchise quarterbacks in Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. And you look at their draft history when it comes to quarterback throughout that time. Tyrod Taylor, sixth-round pick, 2011. Keith Wenning, sixth-round pick, 2014. Then Lamar, Trace McSorley, sixth round pick, 2019. Devin Leary last year.
He was fun.
Sixth round pick. So it's interesting how they really haven't dipped their toes into the waters of even mid-round, fourth, third-round pick, where we know they don't like spending money on the quarterback position.
He's not making any money.
Exactly.
And if he has to play half a season and he goes 6-2, what's that worth?
But the other quarterbacks besides Lamar and Joe have been sixth-round picks.
How about, like, and I love this idea. I just don't realistically see them using a second-round pick when they probably want to use that second-round pick. And they could be wrong because they don't hit, but they're going to use that second-round pick.
Still got like, 9 more picks. And we've said D-tackle. You can find a first-round D-tackle in the fourth round. Bobby D says you could find multiple.
Let me finish. Like, how about day three drafting a kid like Dylan Gabriel at Oregon?
I would be down with that.
Yeah, like I
don't know that he's there day three either, though.
Yeah, but like he, if I'm looking at one, you know, valuation thing that my thing is, I think Jalen Milroe is going in the second round, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So like, I don't think Eric's probably looking at his second round pick, saying he's going to be a guy that helps us win a Super Bowl this year. That's their thought process. And the only way Milroe plays is if Lamar gets hurt.
There are people out there who think that Milroe, the comp for Milroe, could be Jalen Hurts.
Oh, I like Milroe. I like him a lot.
I mean, could you imagine you have a young Jalen Hurts backing up Lamar for 3 years, and then you turn him into whatever?
And to your point, how we drafted Hurts when he had Carson Wentz.
Yes.
When they thought Carson Wentz was
really
good.
Thought he was a perennial MVP. Pick.
Yes. So, like, this, we've seen this before.
Now, it's not always right. We saw... No. Might have still been Banner, but Howie would have been there if it was still Banner. They have McNabb. They're starting to get worried about McNabb staying healthy. They take, what was it, Kevin Cobb, wasn't that?
Yeah, remember that? Yeah. Those were fun days.
And I'm not saying they all work out, but I'm also saying this would not be without precedent. If they have the roster that they think they have, there's not a ton of holes there. And there's no guarantee that whoever you take in the second round is going to give you. Didn't they take David Ajabo in the second round?
They did.
They did.
How would this be that much different than that?
But they would say, and I hate to speak for them, but they would say, I could take a defensive lineman in the second round that might start for us or play a lot for us to help us win games now.
The guy wasn't going to play the whole first year.
Which guy?
Ajabo.
No, I'm talking about this year. I'm this year specific.
But I'm just saying, they used the second round pick on a redshirt.
Yeah.
They so if the, I'm they just saying, were, this kid could redshirt for a year behind Cooper Rush and then play the entire preseason. And then if Lamar gets hurt... I mean, maybe I'm out on a limb here, but I can remember when the dominant conversation in this town was, could Lamar stay healthy?
Yes.
And you actually have someone with real upside,
yes,
not a sixth-round project, to come in and save your season.
Yeah. No, I love it. I just don't see it.
I would be surprised, just because they'd be breaking tendency. And maybe they do it next year when Cooper Rush goes into a contract year, but...
It's cool. It's very interesting outside-the-box thinking, and I love it. I'd rather I would like to see them take a quarterback, and I'd like to see them do it before the sixth or seventh round.
Mm-hmm. Like, no, that should definitely happen.
Yeah, like if they
I think there's going to be a second round run on quarterbacks, and I'm just wondering if they would get in on it if their guy was still there.
You're talking about Milroe, Ewers, McCord, Will Howard. Those guys all going in the second round.
I don't know about Will. I think Will Howard is a media creation. The Louisville kid. Yeah, Quinn Ewers. Yeah, there's a cluster of four or five. I think even the Oregon kid, like
Dylan Gabriel,
four or five kids who are going to have consideration in there.
His issue is he's older than you think because he's been in college so long, and he's a little small. He's 5'11", and that's listed 5'11".
Right.
He's probably closer to 5'10".
I'm old enough to remember Brandon Whedon drafted in the first round, and he was 28.
Yeah, he pitched. Yeah, that was the Cleveland Browns. They're fun. Hey, coming up next.
I'm not sure if that was on Sashi's watch or not.
I think it was pre-Sashi.
I think he was probably there in some capacity. Yeah. Was he in Jacksonville then, or was he there? I don't know.
Coming up next, we stick with football, but league at large, and we're past the league meetings. We'll hear from Andy Reid. We'll hear from Sean McDermott. It's league at large next here on The Fan.
You're getting a phenomenal guy. Great human being. An all-pro player, very tough, dirty tough. Doesn't say, again, a whole lot, but he's a good leader in that room. He's experienced. He's been doing it quite a while, so he gets it. You'll love him.
So that's Andy Reid talking to, I think, a Bears reporter, and mm-hmm. he was asked, what are the Bears getting in Joe Tooney? And so now that the dust has settled on all the moves that were made in free agency, and the Chiefs made a few. And
not
they,
much.
They went and got the backup left tackle from the 49ers, but they traded Joe Tooney. What do you think of all that and the way their line looks right now?
I got to say, I've been underwhelmed by what the Chiefs have done. And I thought they'd at least go out and get a replacement level left tackle like Cam Robinson just in case. This is not a great draft for it. And with where they're picking, you know, the few offensive linemen that are graded as definite first rounders, I think they're going to be long gone. They've had difficulty drafting some offensive linemen, particularly tackles. And they didn't want to pay Joe Tooney what the Bears were willing to pay him. So, you know, they gave the money to the young guard. It's obviously a pivotal draft for them because we all watched, like, they got ravaged. I mean, it wasn't even a fight. That's the worst Patrick Mahomes has ever looked since he left Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know that it's particularly close. To me, it was way worse than the Super Bowl against the 49ers.
You mean the way Buccaneers? Worse. But the one where he's getting destroyed
by the either.
Yeah.
Because they had a rough first half in the one against the 49ers, right? And then came back in the second half. And then, yeah, Tampa. I'm surprised that there wasn't more of a sense of urgency. And I'm frankly now looking back on it with the draft here and free agency essentially over, saying I wonder if they're going to regret not just giving Tooney his money and trying to coax that thing for one more year more years.
He was their best offensive lineman, and you moved him from his all-pro position at guard
with
to
short
left
arms.
Tackle.
You're playing a short arm left tackle. It might catch up to you at some point.
Jason, you brought up, going back to the playoffs, the possibility of Ronnie Stanley going to Kansas City in free agency. Do you think they had a lot of eggs in that basket?
Yeah, I mean, it's not much of a free agent class. So he was clearly the best offensive lineman available, the best tackle available. And it wasn't particularly close. If their offensive line is a problem this year, that signing might be a double win for the Ravens. Not only them getting him, but keeping him away from Andy Reid, who, if there are two more really good seasons left in Ronnie Stanley's body, and you got him, and they're drafting some kid who can't play or trying to prop up a kid from last year's draft who couldn't really play, that could be the kind of thing that swings one of these playoff games finally the Ravens' way.
Let's go stay in the AFC and go to Buffalo and Sean McDermott, and he talks about edge being a point of emphasis for the Bills this offseason.
That's a point of emphasis for us, you know, and like it is probably for most teams of, you know, building the defensive line to where we need to have it. That's a position that we value greatly.
Well, they did. They went out and got Joey Bosa. They re-signed one of their own. Yeah, we'll see what Joey Bosa
in the
gives
role
them.
Of Von Miller.
Yeah,
how did that work out for him?
So, how much better are they?
I think they really want Trey Hendrickson. Now, I don't know if they'd be willing to trade a one for him. But it sounds like that's the going rate that the Bengals are putting out there. Now that could obviously change by the draft. I will say this: you can start to look around. There's props available for the draft. And you can look at teams with certain needs and what will they do, and you get value on it. And the sooner you make that bet, the better, because the closer we get to the draft and the more that things crystallize, the value changes. I mean, I can't imagine the Buffalo Bills are not taking somebody for their front seven with their first pick. I mean, they have to have more pass rush bite. I mean, they saw the Super Bowl. They know what their struggles have been like against the Chiefs when the games really, really matter, and what it takes to finally beat Mahomes. They're lucky they survive Lamar. And if Andrews catches the ball, maybe they don't survive Lamar.
Yes.
Like, Joe Burrow, I mean, I can't imagine that they, and you heard McDermott there, that they feel very, even with Joey Bosa, that they feel very comfortable about their pass rush right now.
Well, it's pass rush bite, and it's also size along that defense.
Yes.
Where
they're light in the butt.
Yeah, they have to lean into the strong defensive line draft. Get one, if not two.
Oh,
of
I
these
think
guys.
They're double and tripling down. Yeah. I mean, they could use it across the board. It's just that it's a really late one. I do wonder if maybe they ultimately relent. I mean, If you get Trey Hendrickson and then Bosa gives you anything and you draft a kid who's okay in the second round and you still have Russo kicking around,
yeah,
you could start to talk me into that.
Couple other things really quickly. There's a new highest paid tight end in the National Football League. His name is Trey McBride. He signed a 4-year extension worth $76 million yesterday with $43 million guaranteed.
He set a record for most receptions in a season before he had a touchdown.
Touchdown, yeah.
Like he caught like 100 balls before he had a touchdown. So, I mean, that, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I watched every snap of the Cardinals, but I got a pretty good feel for little Kyler Murray. I mean, he catches a lot of chain-moving, high-percentage balls. I don't know, man. Like, he's a nice player, yeah. And I get it. You got to spend your money on somebody, and you should keep your own. But I don't think that offense is going to be much different this year than it has been. They've had a hell of a time drafting offensive linemen. The defense is suspect. That coach is now going into year three, right? Are they any better off than they were 2 years ago?
No.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the Geno Smith extension? 2 years, $75 million.
$40 million for 1 year. Like, again, people can knock Seattle. But you're telling me, what did they get for Geno? A 4 or a 3?
Something like that.
Third.
I'm going to get a 3. Oh, and it's a high 3 because it's from the crappy Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get a 3 for a guy who wants $40 million a year on an extension, who's older than Sam Darnold. And I'm going to get that draft pick, plus I'm going to get Sam Darnold basically 1 year for 30 while they're paying Geno 1 year for 40. I mean, that to me is a no. And I own Darnold beyond. If I want him for more than that, I can. But I could also get out after 1 year for 30 rather than keep kicking around with the Geno thing. To me, that's a win for Seattle.
Coming up next here on the program, it's Friday, time for our best bets. We'll talk to our friend Ariel Epstein and our own Beltway Ben Hall. That is next here on The Fan.